This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Tune in to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, a Crime House original podcast to uncover the world's darkest secrets. Find Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we have Nick Caserio joining us at the bottom of the hour. In the next segment, prior to that, we'll hear from Sean McVay. He met with the media yesterday or earlier this week, and we'll get updates on the Rams side of things. We mentioned the two players, key players for the Rams that are going to be coming in at least a little bit rusty. We'll talk about that at 7:15 on the show. David Mulligheta is the agent for Micah Parsons, and of course, Parsons just traded from the Cowboys to the Packers for a couple of first-round picks and a player, and in the process, Micah Parsons becomes, by far, the highest non-paid quarterback or highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL at $47 million a year. There was a lot of stories out there swirling, Seth, about how this whole thing went down over the last several months, and all of those stories prior to yesterday had been coming from Jerry Jones, Jerry Jones' side of things. Micah hadn't really spoken about the contract. David Mulligheta, his agent, doesn't do many interviews to begin with. So you can imagine the importance that David Mulligheta felt in the truth getting out there when he did a 15-minute sit-down with Stephen A. Smith on Get Up yesterday.
Which he doesn't, you know, Mulligheta doesn't really, you know, participate in name-slinging or anything like that, or just, you know, coming out and trying to dish about how contract negotiations went. So it is notable that he went on with Stephen A. Smith to talk about this specifically.
Yep, and they asked him, were the Cowboys, because Jerry Jones claimed, we were ready to make Micah the highest paid non-quarterback when Micah and I had our handshake deal back several months ago. Were the Cowboys going to make Micah the highest paid non-quarterback?
From an APY standpoint, if you're just looking at the average that they was offered to him, I believe it was 40.5 was the offer, which would have made him at the time, from an APY standpoint, the highest paid. That being said, the way the cash flow was structured over his first three new years, he would not be paid as the highest paid player in the NFL. So again, that's why I say the devil's in the details. And another important part of the contract was a 4-year deal versus a 5-year deal, right? When you look at that, that fifth new year could be the difference in $30 to $40 million for the player. You know, if you look at where the pass rusher market was a year ago, it was at $35 million or so with Nick Bosa. Now it's at $47 million in 1 year with Micah Parsons. So 4 years from now, what do you think that number is? It's probably closer to $65-70 million a year. And if we lock in that fifth year currently at $40 million, just that year alone is worth an additional $30 million to Micah, if not more. And that's not even counting the raise that he got for the next 4 years, or the fact that the Packers were good enough to us that they gave us the fifth year option as a linebacker this year as opposed to a DN. So that's an additional $3 million. So, you know, the difference between those two deals you're looking at could be possibly, you know, $60-70 million when it's all said and done.
Yeah, the Cowboys wanted to lock him in for a fifth year on this extension.
Yeah.
That would have been at 2025 prices. And Mulligheta is saying, like, hey, man, the price of poker is going to go up.
And with guarantees in the first year, but not beyond. This is exactly. All of this, everything Mulligheta said yesterday, it confirms how I suspected it probably actually went with Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons, not the way that Jerry was claiming it. And just before we get into any of this, do you realize how bad your reputation is as an owner if, by and large, a majority of people are completely buying the story of an agent over the owner? It's just, I mean, that's how bad Jerry Jones' reputation is. So the entire time it felt to me like this was a classic instance where the billionaire owner was trying to pull the wool over the young, dumb athlete in his mind, the young, dumb athlete's mind, and tell him things like, oh, yeah, hey, your average per year will be the highest of a non-quarterback in history. That's how they try to get the idiots. is the average per year. Because that, like, the average per year means very little without the context of everything else.
Yep.
And Mulligetta went on to say more about how this was like basically, like I've said, like an unscrupulous timeshare salesperson trying to dupe somebody into a deal.
Especially when you, and you're about to hear this, especially when you hear how Jerry Jones was able to lure Micah Parsons up to his office to have this conversation. He lured him up there under the guise of, hey, I want to talk about leadership. And then it turns into a contract negotiation.
As far as Mike is concerned, he was, you know, he was out of the country. He got a call from Jerry's assistant and was asked to come in to meet about leadership. So when he got back from his vacation, he came in and he gave them a call, told him he was back. He was ready to meet. At some point during that meeting that was represented to him about was going to be about leadership, it turned into contract talk. And, you know, if you're a 25-year-old football player and your boss, who happens to be the most powerful person in the NFL, starts talking about contracts, it's hard for you to end that conversation. So they had a conversation. Micah nodded his head out of respect. Obviously, there's a power dynamic that's a little different there. One guy is the owner of the team and the GM. And the other one is Micah Parsons, a young 25-year-old football player. So I'm not sure if there was a miscommunication there by the time Micah walked out, but at no point did Micah believe that he was negotiating a contract.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's it's exactly how you just described it.
No, and just Jerry, and that's exactly how I figured that it went. Yeah. And because I know, Sean, I know these people. I know these owners and these that's the way. And it's with people like Jerry, especially. Jerry strikes me as a classic kind of guy that if he doesn't hear an objection, he assumes that it's agreement.
Validation.
Or if Micah says something like that sounds good or something. But then Jerry, and we don't even have to speculate on it, Jerry very conspicuously continued to violate the collective bargaining agreement by trying to exclude the agent from the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And having excuses for why that was so, or no, that's David Mulligetta's part. No, he flat out said the agent doesn't need to get involved. That's a violation of the collective bargaining agreement. So he was every step along the way trying to isolate Micah Parsons and basically bully him into taking this deal. And it was one of the most backwards-ass things I've ever seen out of a guy who's done a lot of backwards ass things. Like, this was one of the most egregiously bad. He is a scumbag, man.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones is a bad person. He is an awful, awful person. And if it were simply the fact that you're 82 years old and maybe starting to lose it, I might not be as aggressive in saying that. But this is how he's operated for a long, long time. He's a bad person. He used to be great for the NFL. Now he's really bad for the NFL.
Yep. Here's one more from David Mulligetta. This is yesterday on First Take. He said, Micah grew up rooting for the Cowboys. He wanted to be a Dallas Cowboy.
I think the most important thing is that Micah wanted to be a Cowboy, right? You know, he grew up cheering for the Cowboys, you know, wore the blue and white at Penn State, wore it in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys. He wanted to be a Cowboy. We did everything we could for him to remain a Cowboy. We reached out. And like you said, I don't really do these interviews. We try to keep the negotiations out of the media. But in this case, so much information has been put out there that we wanted to just address a couple of things. But as far as Michael is concerned, he wanted to be a Cowboy. We did everything we could. And sometimes you got to be a little careful with what you read in the media as far as what was offered to Micah, the guarantees that were offered, the APY that was offered. There's so much that goes into an NFL contract. If you look at many of these contracts that the Cowboys have done over the past few years and the recent ones, you know, the guarantees don't stretch much further than the first new year. If you look at Micah's current deal, he has guarantees into, you know, 4 years from now. So, again, there are certain things that have been put out in the media to make it look as though Micah turned down a fair or a great deal, but that's simply not the case.
The part about that Mulligetta points out, like, that he doesn't often do these things out front like this, like he's doing this interview yesterday, I think is notable. I can't remember David Mulligetta doing an interview like we saw yesterday with Stephen A. Smith, where it was almost like they were taking the four or five biggest things that Jerry Jones had put out there last year and one by one going through them and saying, no, here's what the truth is. I mean, I'm paraphrasing now, but essentially saying, no, this is what happened. No, this is what happened. Here's what happened with Micah getting called. The fact that he got called in to the office under the guise of, I just want to talk about leadership.
Dude, it feels not, so much.
Not only real quick, Seth, not only that it was a topic that Jerry Jones clearly didn't want to make the main topic, but one that probably Micah viewed as something that was stroking him a little bit. Hey, I want to talk about leadership. And like, oh, yeah, I want to talk about this. He sees me as a leader on the football team. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you know, Jerry thinks he's negotiating a contract with you.
There's so much. I mean, most young people wouldn't have seen the movie North Dallas 40, but it's out there. You can watch it on YouTube, probably for free. They've become the embodiment of North Dallas 40, this old football movie where the owners are just acting super, super shady. They might as well have been calling Nick Nolte into the office to show him a video or a picture of him smoking a marijuana cigarette. It was it's just shady stuff.
It is.
And honestly, Jerry Jones tried to make this about him versus David Mulligetta. And like David Mulligetta worked Jerry Jones over.
Yep.
Just pummeled him.
Yep.
Mulligetta could have ended it in the third round, but he extended it on into 15 rounds so he could just keep pummeling him. Jerry Jones looks like an idiot right now.
All right, coming up next, the Rams and the Texans play on Sunday. Two big players for the Rams. Might they be rusty? Big positions here on Sunday. We'll talk about that. Nick Caserio joins us. Bottom of the hour. That's all coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Here was Sean McVay in his press conference earlier this week, talking up the Houston Texans, his opponent, on Sunday at 3:25 Houston time.
They're a great team. You know, I think they take on the personality of their head coach. And D'Amico's a guy, physical, tough. They play smart. They toe the line. I think they're really, you know, that's reflected in all three phases. You know, they have continuity in the defense and on the special teams where they've been excellent. And then I think they've been really dang good the last couple years on offense. Obviously took a little bit of a step back, but, you know, we know what a great coach Nick Caley is. They kept a lot of their great coaches that were already in place. You know, he and Jerry Schaplinski are really the only new guys as far as I know. It's excellent personnel. There's a style of play. There's a reason why they've been a top eight team each of the last couple years, you know, winning their division and then being able to advance into the divisional round. And, you know, they're excellent. We got a chance to practice against them a year ago, but everything that they're about is what I respect, and that's why we know it'll be such a great challenge, and that's what you love about the league.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun. That's one of the better matchups of week one, I will say that for sure.
The little part where he caught himself there was that they've been a really good offense the last couple of years, and he caught himself, said they took a step back. I think he's probably a fan of C.J. Stroud and thinks that he's good moving forward. And the big dynamic there is, look, he mentioned Caley, and it's understandable. I myself wonder, like, okay, well, how much does he know about Caley, and how much does Caley know about him? You throw all of that out the window in this situation, especially because McVay will change things from year to year, and they don't play any of their starters at all in the preseason. They get most of their work done in joint practices with their starters, so you're not going to have any intel, or if they're deciding to add any wrinkles or operate a little bit differently, it's really hard to see. I think the disadvantage for the Texans when it comes to the coach versus coach matchup, for the Texans, it might be that, hey, Nick Caley is trying to install an offense. He's putting it right out there, whether it's starters or backups or anything else. I think you watch what they've done in the preseason and figure, okay, this is at least the basic framework of what they're going to do.
The vanilla version of what they're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, McVay's not going to read too much into it, but they've got some film that they can use to prepare their players with, where the Texans, you get less of it. You got last year's film, and you've got all of that. So you can work on the individual players. But the Rams might just have some wrinkles and some tricks up their sleeves that you just, there's no way to prepare for it. You got to do it on the fly.
Yeah, we'll talk about that dynamic with Nick Caserio when he joins us in about 10 minutes or so here on the show. Texans executive vice president and GM. Two big players. We talked a little bit about this in headlines, but two big players for the Rams are going to be, this we know, playing with very little training camp under their belts. The first is Matt Stafford, the quarterback. He's had back issues, as we know. He's been taking epidurals for a disc in his back. This is Sean McVay, though, confirming Matt Stafford will start on Sunday.
Do you expect Matthew to start against the Texans?
I do. Yeah, he'll be good.
Will he participate in the full week of practice?
Yep.
And then did Alaric practice today?
He did. He looked good, and everybody was out there and accounted for. And so I'll have the full injury report for you guys on Wednesday, but expect to be everybody ready to go.
Okay, so that was and a shout-out to Sarah Barshop, former Houston Texans reporter for ESPN. She now, that was her voice on there.
And she's asking about Alaric Jackson, the starting left tackle.
Who's had blood clot issues.
Yep. He's had blood clot issues throughout training camp.
Yep, so he was the other player that I was alluding to. So Stafford... Yep. Truncated training camp, and Alaric Jackson, as Seth just said, blood clot issues. One more from McVay, and then we'll get thoughts on what this means. Is Jackson, he expanded upon this, is Jackson ready for week one?
You know, I think, we'll get a gauge to see how he feels. The answer is, yeah, that's the plan. We want to make sure that we're taking it a step at a time throughout the course of the week. But, he earned the right to be in the position where, you pay him. He was a huge priority for us to get him back. He's done everything in his power to be ready to go. This has always been the end goal in mind, is to be ready to go against the Texans. Now, it's a great challenge. We know what a great team they have as a whole, and especially great defense. But I do believe that we'll be at our best with him out there.
And you said, Seth, you talked to a couple people that cover the Rams yesterday, and they kind of got the shoulder shrug emoji going on right now.
I think that with both Alaric Jackson and Matt Stafford, they're not your typical routine football injuries.
No.
You don't hear that much about herniated, like a herniated disc for a defensive lineman or something is like, good luck with that. It's probably not going to work out. You're going to be on IR. For a quarterback, this is how I always feel about back injuries. It's not a problem at all until it's a huge problem. It's all or nothing. And if he's getting an epidural and he feels all right, I'm guessing that you should expect him to go out and play like whatever last year's version of Matt Stafford was, perhaps.
Yeah.
Not peak all-pro Matt Stafford or what have you, but a pretty good NFL quarterback. But if he's taking hit after hit and if he's under duress, even if he's feeling all right, there's got to be a little bit of a psychological apprehension there, and not to mention he just hasn't played that much football this year in training camp. I really feel that the Texans, you don't have to overcomplicate this. The Texans' pass rush is really good. They've got questions about the pass protection of the Rams and the health of their left tackle, that at some point in this game, it's probably going to turn south for Matt Stafford.
Yeah.
And at the very least, I think that the Rams are going to have to play a pretty conservative game plan and really try to lean into the run. I think they're going to live with the quick passing. Stafford last year, when healthy, did not do a great job when pressured.
Mm-hmm.
So now with a potential herniated disc issue, it becomes that much more important that they get rid of the ball quickly, that they probably keep extra people in protection. The thing that I worry about the most is just that if it takes just two or three times in this game when Matt Stafford can figure out where there's a mismatch and they've got max protection, can you take a shot downfield? And that just because the coverage is right, the play call is right, if he's judicious and when he takes his shots, he's very much a threat.
Dude, the edge, I think one of the big themes of this game, the edge rushers on both sides have to be licking their chops in this game.
Yeah.
Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, because you've got a debilitated quarterback who's being protected by a left tackle who hasn't really had a training camp yet. And then on the other side, you've got Jared Verse, whose cut-ups were making their way around the internet yesterday. Like, holy God. Ariante Ursary has to deal with.
Well, and the other thing real quick, too, is because I'm so enamored of Jared Verse that I I need to talk more about the other defensive linemen there. You know, the interior defensive line. Puna Ford's a really good nose tackle, and they brought him in. Braden Fisk, the rookie from last year, he's a very good interior defensive lineman. And then Robinson on the other side, the edge rusher, he's very good as well. So it's this brand new offensive line versus some really already established young players for the Rams. It's going to be one in the trenches.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, we will talk to Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio. He drops by for his annual preseason chat with us. We'll get you ready for not just week one, but the upcoming season and all the stuff going on with the Texans as well. They extend Davis Mills yesterday. We'll ask him about that and a whole lot more. Nick Caserio is up next.
All right. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes now to uncover the world's darkest truths. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, you know what that music means. Can only mean one thing. At 7:30 on a weekday on Sports Radio 610, I'm Payne and Pendergast. That is the walkout music for the Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, Nick Caserio, who joins us here in advance of week one of the 2025 season. Nick, it's great to talk to you. How you feeling this morning, my man?
Morning, fellas. Great to be here. Does that the music mean we're going to talk about the clash in Paris?
I was going to ask you, Nick. So you like everybody else, didn't have a game this past weekend. So did you just settle in like I did and just kind of kick your feet up and you have college football on one TV and CM Punk on the other TV? Does Kathleen allow that?
I probably saw a little more college football than CM Punk, but I did see some of the clips. So I'm sure your TV is better than mine. So probably a lot better for your viewing.
So you settled in and watched a little college football. Do you get to actually get to enjoy it? Because you're kind of like it's at least a little bit of downtime before the season. Or are you still watching it through that scouting lens?
Probably watching it more from a big picture scouting lens. There happen to be some pretty good matchups over the weekend, so you're seeing some of the better players play against one another. So it's just a quick cursory overview, and then you're going to do a deeper dive. We had a number of folks that were out over the country. We had a number of scouts at the different games. It's really just an initial starting point, but not really looking at it as a fan, looking at it more from a, all right, two competitive teams. There's a number of prospects and players on the field at one time. How's the game going? How's the flow going? And sometimes, depending on the channel and the game, you get to see some things up close. You get to see some of the quarterback communication, some of the things that they have to handle. So there's always a benefit. There's a TV scouting element, but then you're going to go back to the all 22 and do a deeper dive when you go through your process.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Nick, because that part of it fascinates me, the difference between watching the all 22 versus watching on television. And I always looked at it as, man, when coaches and personnel people watch on television, it must be really frustrating because you really can't see what the receivers and defensive backs are doing for a large majority of the time. But there, like what you just said, I never thought of it that way. There's a benefit to being able to see some of the up-close stuff that you don't necessarily get on the All-22.
For sure, Seth. You can glean a number of different things. Sometimes you can't see the whole play, how it ends up unfolding, but there are things that you can gain from a TV copy. Even during the course of the year when we're watching our opponents, there's TV copies. I mean, you guys watch all the NFL games. I mean, there's 4,000 cameras that are in the stadium, so they have one right on top of the center. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can see. So you're kind of combining everything together. So you might be going back through the all 22, and when the play comes up, you might say to yourself, oh, I remember that play. I saw that play and what happened. But then you're looking at the overall context of the play and what goes on. So part of our responsibility is to piece it all together. You're not going to put like one is more important than the other, but the all 22 certainly has relevance. But there's a lot of relevance to the TV copy as well.
You know what? This is a big win for the movie Draft Day. because remember when they're breaking
I've never
down
seen the movie,
linebacker.
So I can't speak. I can't okay. speak to that.
That was exactly what happened. Now the TV copy, which had been available to everybody for like 6 months in this instance, Kevin Costner notices something about the way one of the linebackers in the draft operated based on the TV copy.
So essentially our job is a really big movie, so I guess we're all Hollywood stars.
Yeah, we don't ask for much, but if and when the time comes that you watch Draft Day, can you please allow Seth and I to sit next to you while you're watching it?
I'll probably be a lot older than I am now.
That's fine.
So it won't be on my radar anytime soon. Damn, so okay. Sorry, Kevin, but no, I'm not really into it.
Hey, last thing, we'll get to NFL stuff here, I promise, but as long as we're talking about the college, as you know, Nick, I watched the Notre Dame-Miami game on Sunday night, and it felt like every Miami guy that made a play in that game, Sean McDonough is going, that's a transfer from Jacksonville State. That's a transfer from LSU. That's a transfer from here. They were all transfers, it felt like. And I was curious watching this game, as you're scouting, how has all the transfer portal stuff affected the way you guys scout players? Does it make it more chaotic, or in some ways does it actually make it more beneficial? You've got more data points to work with.
No, I think you articulated it very well, Sean. It hasn't necessarily created more work, and we don't really view it any differently. What we try to do is just understand the rationale and the thought process behind each individual player and the reason that they transferred. When you look across the country, you've seen multiple examples of players transferring from, call it, big program to big program. You have other players that have transferred up. You know, when you look at the Rams, you know, Fisk and Verse are two good examples of players who essentially transferred up. And I mean, they're two of the better players that they have on their team. So I think our job is just to understand the context of what went into it. Say Miami, they've put an emphasis on the transfer portal. Some teams are a little more portal centric than others. When you look at Indiana with Coach Cignetti, essentially he took a large cohort of players that were with him at JMU. And they showed up in Indiana. So it's just to understand the landscape. We're never going to penalize a player because he's transferred multiple times. You just have to understand what went into it. Now, as you do a deeper dive, if the motive was not necessarily for football-related reasons or there was something more that went into it, then there's a financial component that we're all familiar with that we have to be cognizant of. So you just have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together and just understand, A, how the program is built, what do they emphasize? I think, you know, Clemson, I mean, Dabo's talked about this. They haven't really been big portal. They haven't been into the portal. Now they've had a few over the last few years. But it's really, what's the philosophy of the program? How do they build it? Clemson, Georgia, how they go about it, Ohio State, maybe a little bit different than some other programs. It doesn't mean one's right or wrong. It just means that's their process. That's how they've put the team together. And our job is to understand some of the dynamics that went into it.
What if you're facing a team like the Rams this week, since we're talking about watching games on television at least, the Rams don't play any of their starters all preseason long, or by and large, very, very few of them in the preseason games. Is that a disadvantage compared to the way some other teams operate? And I know that most teams don't play their starters much anyway, but just in terms of really seeing perhaps what they're working on, do you have a little less than you might with another team?
The reality is week one is probably where the most unknowns take place for the reasons that you articulated, Seth. Some players have played, some players haven't. There's a number of new players that have come on from other teams. How are they going to deploy them? How are they going to utilize them? Part of that is going to transpire during the course of the game. So what we have to focus on, make sure that we're sound in the things that we're doing, focus on our fundamentals and techniques, be sound in the call, just be able to go out there and rely on the communication and the work that we've put in training camp, understanding that there's going to be adjustments that we're going to have to make, other teams are going to have to make, especially in the first week. And then once you get into, call it, weeks 3 to 4, essentially teams probably declare about what they look like, how they play, how the personnel is deployed, all those types of things. So there's nothing we can do about it. You know, I'd say in the Rams' case, the staffs have a certain level of continuity. So what they've done over the past couple of years, what Sean's done offensively, what Coach Shula has done defensively, what Coach Blackburn has done in the kicking game, at least you have a reference point. Now, what that looks like in 2025, we're probably going to all find out together.
Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, we'll get into the Rams matchup with you during this conversation for sure. Just coming out of training camp now and heading into the season, We've been talking a ton about the offensive side of the football, obviously, and Nick Caley, new system, the responsibility C.J. Stroud is going to have. How are we feeling right now? You know, C.J.'s now been through the entire offseason with Nick Caley and through an entire training camp. How do you feel about where C.J. is at heading into this season?
Yeah, I mean, we're ready to go. We're in a pretty good spot, so we've put a lot of work from call it to spring up until this point. Now we're going to get into more of a game plan-centric kind of week to week. We have the foundation of the offense that's in place, and then now we're going to look at what's the opponent, what are the things that we're comfortable with, what are the things that we can focus on, what are the things that we can emphasize, and then as we go, probably make some tweaks along the way. So we're in a pretty good spot. We're going to go out here and practice the next 3 days and kind of put the finishing touches on and everything. But the reality is, well, hopefully we'll go out there and we're going to do the things and run the things that we know how to do and then match them up with what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. So in the end, it's going to come down to, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, same thing offensively as we talked about defensively. It's just focusing on your fundamentals and techniques. Probably have some core principles and core concepts that you're going to rely on early that everybody is comfortable with so that you can go out there, you can play fast, and just react to what the defense is doing.
Nick, I'm not going to ask you to break down UNC football or anything or even that game, but obviously you have a lot of experience with Bill Belichick. And Sean and I were talking about it yesterday. And, you know, I said, Sean, there was a period in the 2010s where it seemed like every other year the Patriots would get destroyed early in the season by the Chiefs or the Lions or somebody like that, and then come back and win a Super Bowl later on in the season. What's the mindset in the building, after a loss like that early in the season when Belichick was a coach? And what was the strategy for dealing with something like that? Because obviously they did a good job of rebounding from it.
Sure. I think this league is very process-oriented, and it's such a week-to-week league, so you can't let what happened, good or bad, the previous week impact what's going to happen in future weeks. So in our case, the focus will be on the Rams, regardless of the outcome on Sunday, which hopefully we play well enough to win. But regardless of the outcome, it's take inventory of what happened, understand where the issues are, and let's focus on those areas, try to get those fixed and corrected, and then figure out if those are going to be applicable moving forward or are they not. And then once we turn the page, then it's going to be about the next opponent and what do we need to do that week to put ourselves in a position. So I would say over the course of time, I think that was probably one of the things that we did probably fairly well, and just focused on the present, focus on the 1 week at a time, one game at a time, and just focus on that opponent. When you start to let things that happened in the past in one game affect the next few weeks, and then there's sort of a snowball effect, it's just going to lead to potentially, you know, the result that you don't covet. So I'd say that's the way the league is designed, and it's such a week-to-week endeavor. I know it's kind of a cliche, and nobody really wants to hear that, but that's the reality of the situation. And D'Amico has talked about this multiple times whenever he's been asked about it. I've been, you know, asked about it as well. And I think that's where you have to keep the focus. You have to have a certain level of discipline and focus to be able to block that out. Again, regardless of the result, good or bad, because what happened one previous game, it's hopefully not going to affect what goes into, you know, your work for the next week.
I'm looking at a headline from September 26, 2018 that says the Patriots look finished, so they will probably win the Super Bowl, which is exactly
which
what
they
that was. That was the year they lost to the Jaguars, and then got drubbed by the Lions. And then a couple years since you guys had lost to the Chiefs early in the season, and then won the Super Bowl last year that year. So yeah, that tracks.
Well, it's never fun. Like those, I'm going to say those days after those games are very much fun, but it's work, and you just have to put it behind you. And it leads to some long nights, some long trips home. I mean, a Kansas City trip. We were flying back from Kansas City in the middle of the night because it was a Monday night game. So,
oh, that's the worst. That's the worst. Oh no, getting destroyed in a night game on the road. It's the worst. Oh, let me tell you a quick story. So
please.
Okay. So this was, I think, in 1998. We were I was with the Jaguars. I was injured at the time, so I was watching from home, but it was on Sunday Night Football up in Minnesota. They just got destroyed. Third-string quarterback Jonathan Quinn started the game, and it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah, that was a good Minnesota team. That was Randy Moss and all that.
Yeah. No,
was that Randall Cunningham?
Randall Cunningham. He has a 15-1 year.
That was a good team.
They had John Randall on the defensive line with going against a third-string offensive guard. It was bad. So it's a night game. It stinks. You get beat up there. They're flying home, but the airport was fogged in. So they had to go land in Orlando, sit on the tarmac from like 4 to 6 a.m. And then come to Jacksonville. I was injured, so I was going in to do my rehab on a Tuesday morning. Assuming it would be me and a few of the other guys who were injured going in there, I get out of my car and I see Mark Brunell and Tony Boselli in their suits getting out of their car to walk in. I was like, what's going on, guys?
Hey, guys.
He said, well, Coughlin said everybody has to
see,
come in.
See, the NFL isn't as glamorous as everybody thinks.
Coughlin made everybody who had been sitting on the airplane all night long go from the airport to go do a workout and get their cardio in. They had to do a 15-minute exercise bike because he was just so disgusted with everybody. Which I feel like with all the modern analytics, that might have been the analytics staff might have been. Yeah,
the sleep studies would probably tell you that didn't work out very well.
Oh, man. We didn't know what sleep was back in 1998. Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. So, Nick, it looks like Arianta Arisri is going to get his first start at left tackle going up against a pretty good Rams front, including Jared Verse. How ready do you feel Arianta is, and how do you help out a rookie in his first start against a defense like this?
Yeah, we're probably as ready as we'll be on the offensive line. So, you know, we understand the challenge in front of us against the Rams. I mean, this is arguably like top to bottom, like 1 through 5 when you include Puna Ford in there, which not everybody's really talking about Puna. But,
yeah.
I mean, they have probably – this is collectively, you know, one of the better defensive lines we'll probably see over the course of the year just from a 1 through 5 basis. Like, we're going to face good defensive linemen every week. And some teams maybe only have one or two, but you know, when you look at the Rams, I mean, they literally have 5 guys who are as good as anybody in the league at their respective positions. So we understand the challenges that are in front of us, so it's going to take a collective effort, like how we play offensively. You know, we're certainly going to have to account for their defensive line and almost every snap, how they use them, where they line up. I mean, Fisk has a lot of position versatility. He's played defensive tackle. He's played defensive end. They put him on, you know, call it outside linebacker on the edge. I mean, Verse kind of moves around the front a little bit. So, I mean, this is a really good front. Again, it's probably as good of a front, just top to bottom, that we're going to face 1 through 5. So, you know, we're going to need everybody to just focus on their execution, their fundamentals, and their assignment, understand what the intent is on each play, and just make sure the communication is clean. It's going to be a hostile environment. It's going to be on the road. So we just got to make sure we have all 5 doing the same thing. And the tight ends will be a part of it, and the running backs will be a part of it. Quarterback will certainly have responsibility in it as well. So it's going to take a collective effort to handle their defense without question.
Yeah, that's we were actually talking about Puna Ford just last hour because I'm guilty of it myself. I've been watching a lot of Jared Verse as of late, and you kind of lose sight of the fact that Puna Ford was a huge addition for them. And look, that Chargers game last year in the playoffs, for the Texans fans that don't remember, Puna Ford was on that team. And even when the Chargers defense was taking their lumps, Puna Ford he kept showing up. So the way I'm looking at this game, Nick, is I feel like, you know, with the new – There's a mindset that, you know, D'Amico has talked about it. The offensive linemen have talked about it. I feel like this might be the perfect game if you want to be about a new mentality of being physical and being blue collar and gritty and all that. It feels like a challenge they can really embrace.
No, it's certainly going to be a challenging situation for our team. I mean, this is a good football team that we're playing, but you know, we have confidence in the players that will be on the field. You know, we feel that we'll be prepared by the time we step on the plane on Friday. We're going out there a day early. So, I mean, the goal is to have a good week, just understand. And it once you get into the regular season, and we've talked about this, it's such a personnel-driven league. It's just understanding who you're playing. The scheme is the scheme, but also understanding who the players are, what are their strengths, what are weaknesses, what are some areas that you might be able to exploit, because that's as important as anything else.
What Nick, for the Rams, what does Devontae Adams bring to them? They've already got Puka Nacua, obviously. So now you got Devontae Adams, who's been one of the best receivers in football over the last decade, and going up against what is obviously a strength for you guys with Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter.
No, Devontae brings a lot. I mean, he's been a very productive player in this league for a long time. I think the one thing that he provides, he has an element of position versatility. He can line up in multiple spots. He can play in the perimeter. He can play inside the formation. You know, when he was with the Jets last year, I mean, he hit us on a touchdown pass there on third down coverage, you know, on a slot fade, which we had decent coverage. I mean, JP was in a good spot, but, you know, Devontae ended up making a good move. So the thing about Devontae, he does a number of things well. He's very smart. He's a very instinctive player. He'll probably be lined up all over the formation. Puka gives them some flexibility as well. Atwell is a little bit more, I would say, specific to pass game. You know, maybe third down kind of brings a speed element. You know, and Whittington's done a good job for them in his role kind of as a fourth receiver. So, I mean, they've talked about Devontae all offseason. I think the four tight ends that are on the roster as well will factor in, including the second-round pick Ferguson. So this is where, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, there's going to be an element of kind of figuring out where they lined up, how are they deploying them, how are they utilizing them. But, I mean, Devontae's a really good football player, and he certainly presents challenges on the offensive side of the ball, you know, no question.
Nick, I don't think we talked about this with you the last time because maybe I hadn't noticed it yet. But this training camp, I can't remember the last time I was impressed with the young running backs and pass protection. I don't think it's a thing that I've ever even really noticed or thought about because usually it doesn't happen. But, you know, with Jawar Jordan and Woody Marks this year, there were some things they did that you don't typically see out of young players. What part of Nick Caley or the coaching staff in general, and then as well, you know, those two players obviously as well, like, what goes into that? Why was that so seemingly impressive this year?
No, it's a great observation, Seth. I think pass protection is about a mentality and an overall mindset, and you have to want to pass protect, and it's understanding A, who are you blocking? B, there's going to be contact and there's going to be a physical element that's involved. And a lot of times, if you have the linebacker in A or B gap, he's going to be coming downhill at you. So you're either going to brace for contact and play with good body position and leverage, or you're not. You're going to get run over. So I would say a ton of credit should go to Danny Barrett. We put an emphasis on pass protection, and playing running back is not just about carrying a ball and catching the ball. It's about pass protection, especially on third down, is an important element. You're not going to get the back out all the time, so inevitably he's going to have to do something. He's going to have to block. He's going to have to block a linebacker. He might be chipping an edge. So there's a number of things. So it takes a certain mentality. Say that group overall has an element of toughness to them and physicality, and you see that in all of them, top to bottom. You mentioned Jawar, even though he's on a practice squad. But he did a good job as any. I mean, British did a really good job in that capacity. I mean, Dare, that's a strength of his. So they have all been asked to do it, and it just comes with the territory. So, and there's a selfless element that's involved, and I would say that group kind of embodies the overall philosophy and mentality of our team. It's whatever it takes to get the job done. So they work really hard at it. Danny really works at it with them, and people, it's like receivers blocking. Like if you're on this football team and you play a receiver, you're gonna have to block. This isn't like it's optional whether or not, like, there's no choice. So you're gonna have to go in there, you're gonna have to block the force, you're gonna have to dig out a defender. And the way the defenses play nowadays, there's gonna be an extra defender. So how do you account for that extra defender? It's probably gonna be the receiver. So the receiver's gonna go in there and do the dirty work and dig him out, or he's not. And if he's not, he's probably gonna not be playing here. He's gonna be on another team. So I mean, Hutch will go in there and do it. Nico will go in there and do it when he's asked to do it. I mean, even Tank, I mean, I know he went in there and he got hurt, you know, against Denver a couple of years ago, but it's not for lack of effort and, you know, mindset and toughness. So it's emblematic of what we want this team to look like. But I'd say that's something they take a lot of pride in. And Danny, you know, Danny Barrett deserves a lot of credit for their performance of the backs without question.
Nick Caserio joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Nick, reports yesterday that Davis Mills has agreed to an extension for the 2026 season. I thought Davis has had a really good camp. How much did that factor into you guys wanting to make sure he was around for another year after this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, we always look at those situations case by case. Let's say in Davis's situation, he's been as consistent a player over the past, call it, a couple of years as probably any player on our team. To your point, Sean, he had a really good training camp, so a lot of confidence in Davis. And you know, sometimes those things work themselves out. We had good constructive conversations with his representatives, and it's something that we all felt, you know, pretty strongly about from the offensive staff, D'Amico and I, and we were able to kind of get that self worked out. So Davis deserves a lot of credit, as does the offensive staff, Gerard, Jerry, Nick Haley, and Davis has put the work in. So, you know, that position is valuable, and, you know, it's not important until it is. So, like, we fill that room overall between CJ, Davis, and Graham, that we feel like it's a pretty strong room. So if we can kind of keep a certain level of continuity in place for a period of time, like, that's the goal. So, you know, happy that we're able to work that out with Davis. And, you know, Davis has earned it without question.
Yeah, Davis is interesting, Nick, because he was the starter for, you know, in 2022, he was a starter coming into camp, and we know that there was kind of a bumpy season for him, but he was at one point the named starter of an NFL team, and then a young quarterback comes in, CJ, and obviously highly drafted, he's going to be the guy eventually. But what does it say about Davis that he seems to have kind of embraced that backup role, and what's the dynamic like between Davis and CJ?
Yeah, it's a really good room. They work well with one another. And Davis, I mean, you guys have talked to him. Davis is kind of very even keel, kind of stays down the middle. His personality doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And the backup, that player is to provide, you know, is a good resource for whomever the starter is. I mean, they can talk about things kind of quarterback to quarterback. But Davis is very smart. He works very hard. And like I said, his personality is such that he understands what the role is. It doesn't mean that he's not competitive. He's not, you know, wanting to go out there and play. But Davis has taken advantage of his opportunities, and that's all you can ask for any player. So there's going to be competition across positions. There's going to be a starter. There's going to be a backup. There's going to be a role player. And just if you understand what your role is on the team, it doesn't mean you're going to work less. You're going to continue to work and put yourself in a position to do what's best for the team. So there's a selfless element that's involved, I would say, in the backup position, not only for our team, but across the league. So that dynamic and, you know, that how you put that room together is important. So it's something that, you know, we spend a lot of time discussing. So, you know, Davis deserves a lot of credit for the way he handles himself, is as consistent and professional as we have on a team. And to your point, Sean, I mean, there's been a lot of ups and downs in his career, but I mean, he started, I don't know, 27, 30 games, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And he's always prepared and ready to go. So, you know, credit to him for how he goes about his business.
You know, when you're talking with somebody like Davis that you've known for a long time, you have a relationship with him, you know, obviously there's a certain trust level for him to have re-upped with you a couple times already. Do you have explicit conversations about potential trade opportunities or scenarios that, hey, if something comes up where there's a trade and it could be advantageous to both of us, that we're both open to it?
We're always open. You know, kind of how we operate is we'll listen, but in the end, we're going to make the decision that we feel is best for our organization. So I'd say Davis is a player that, you know, teams have asked about. He's certainly respected for, you know, what he provides and what he brings to the table around the league. So in the end, we're going to do what we feel is best for our team and just try to make good, smart decisions along the way.
I guess, yeah. So, like, as a backup quarterback in general, as a general rule of thumb, I'm like, Davis, you don't have to speak for Davis, but like, there's an understand that, okay, I'm signing a deal, but the best thing for that quarterback sometimes might be that he gets traded. So he's like, they know that it's a possibility that he's not signing up for necessarily 2 years for sure with the Texans.
I think everybody knows kind of in this league, anything's a possibility.
Yeah.
So ultimately we're going to, you know, take the information, and if something were presented to us, the way we work is take the information, D'Amico and I will talk about it, and then we'll decide what we feel, you know, is best for us. So we're pretty open-minded, but by the same token, in the end, we're going to focus on our team and doing what's best for us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.